Welcome to Industry Insights, the EFM podcast, presented by the European Film Market of the Berlinale. My name is Johanna Koljonen. I'm a media analyst and experienced designer based in Malmö, Sweden. Industry Insights, the EFM podcast, puts a spotlight on highly topical and trendsetting industry issues, creating a compass for the forthcoming film year. This year-round podcast is produced in cooperation with Goethe Institute and co-funded by Creative Europe Media. Today's episode has been developed in partnership with Kids Regio and Publicum. We'll talk about their incredibly useful recent report on young European film audiences. How young, you may ask? 7 to 11 years old. Joining me today are three guests. I will start with two of them. Anne Schultka, hello, welcome to the show.
Hi, Johanna, thanks for inviting me.
Enrique Flodin, hi.
Hi.
Rikke is partner at Willen Agency, where she's head of audience insights for Publicum, this Danish-based tool for audience awareness. Within the last few years, you, Rikke, have worked on more than 80 films and series across 10-plus European countries, helping filmmakers get closer to their audiences through AI-backed anthropology. I'm going to ask you about all of this, but fundamentally, Rikke, you are an anthropologist. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
And Anne Schultka has a bunch of hats, as many of us in this industry do. Most importantly today, project manager for the Kids Regio Children's Film Initiative, where she organizes pan-European networking and industry events. You're also head of industry at the Golden Sparrow Festival for German children's media, responsible for organizing events for the festival's professional visitors. Would you like to add something, Anne?
That's, I think, for this episode, the most important. I think also adding to that and to a political perspective on everything, I'm also on the board of the German Children's Film Association doing lobby work in Germany and with Kids Regio on a European level. So that's a nice match.
So actually, maybe we should just say what Kids Regio is, Anne. What is it, in case somebody hasn't come across it?
Kids Regio is a subgroup of CineRegio, and CineRegio is the membership association of regional film funds in Europe, and it is also attached to the German Children's Media Foundation Golden Sparrow, that's also hosting the festival that I'm doing the industry part of. And Kids Regio was founded in 2009 with the first Kids Regio Forum, bringing together people from all over Europe in the children's film and the broader film industry to talk about challenges for children's filmmakers and really putting the young audience in the center of all our discussion and trying to raise the awareness within the industry and outside of the industry that this is the most important audience, actually, I think at least.
And there is, yeah, some context for that is, I know from my other work that sometimes the status of children's film and certainly the attention given to children's film is not very high, is not very good. And local children's films, that is to say non-US children's films, often have difficulty traveling. We're going to come back to that as well. So, Rikke, from your perspective, how did the work with this report start?
I think the work started through a conversation that Anna and I had in Berlin, where we sat down. We had encountered at BUF in Malmö some months before, and I had shared some insights there about how we work at Publicum with audience awareness. I would say that I think 30% of all the works that we are involved with are targeted the younger audiences. And Anna and I had a conversation about how we often are really good in the Nordic countries to engage with audiences earlier on, but the same does not hold true for the rest of Europe. So we were talking about how it would be possible to get a better look at all of Europe's youngest audiences and how we could maybe help the industry get a better understanding of the target group that they really want to create content for. And with, potentially. So that's where it all started, in Berlin during the Berlinale.
We obviously love that a lot at this podcast. I feel like in the Nordics, certainly, but in many countries, I think actually this Publicum process is relatively well known because many filmmakers are working with it. But again, not everyone will have heard of your AI-backed anthropology. What is it actually that you normally do?
In a typical project, we will help filmmakers in early development build their audience strategy by engaging with the audiences earlier in development stages than what's normally being done. So we will use AI-backed anthropology to explore the zeitgeist of a certain topic in a film or exploring different markets. And we will help the filmmakers understand how is the theme of my film relevant to the audiences that I'm trying to get in touch with. And then we engage audience members, so actual real people who will be presented to different materials from a film in development. So you can say that you're kind of showing an audience a film that's not made by sharing maybe synopsis or different parts from the script. It can be character descriptions. It can be maybe you have a pilot or you have some sort of visual inspiration that you would like the audience to give your feedback on. And in this sense, we really try to understand, especially with the younger audiences, where is the strongest audience hook? Where are they connected to the story? Where are they fascinated by the story? Where or when are they losing interest in the story? And what could make them choose to watch the story that you are developing for them?
So I find this report incredibly fascinating and useful. I just think everybody should read it because there's a lot going on. You are able to answer these questions. You're answering questions about how young people engage with children's film, but you also have this analysis of how they think about it. Like, what is a film for these young audiences and what kinds of things are attractive? We're going to get into it a little bit more in a little while. I'm just fascinated. Did you know from the beginning that you needed to work on a totally sort of conceptual level? Like, what words are we even using here? Or did you think it would be relatively easy to go out and say, talk to me about the films you like?
We were greatly inspired by a research study that Publicum had done for the Danish Film Institute, where we had been exploring the young audiences in the age 7 to 18. And in that research study, we had explored on a more phenomenological approach or level, what is film to younger audiences? How are they perceiving the category of film and what is a film to them? And Anna and I thought it would be really interesting to kind of copy paste that curiosity into the rest of the European countries that we were about to explore to really get a better understanding of, are there any vital generational differences and gaps that we need to be aware of? And yeah. I would say, yes, there is, because a film is not a film. It doesn't mean the same thing when you look at the young audiences and you look at the adult people who are making films for younger audiences.
Maybe the most shocking thing I read in the whole report was that the youngest viewers now have parents who are also like streaming natives and social media natives. And that is mind blowing to me as someone in my 40s who's done a very different kind of media journey in my life. So Anna, you ended up with the 7 to 11 years old sort of target audience, and you chose 12 European countries, countries that are quite different and have very different also production volumes. How did you zoom in on this age group and which countries to speak to?
That was a very technical decision for both of your questions. So the 7 to 11 is actually because children's film in our definition is for 6 to 12 year olds. So below that is toddler cinema, you could say, kindergarten cinema. And then 6 to 12 is usually the main thing when we speak about children's films. But because Will and agency said they usually have an age span of 5 years, I was like, okay, let's do 7 to 11 because that is between 6 and 12. So that also represents the 6 and 12 year olds. And then for the countries that we choose, we actually try to do a little, you could say, cultural mapping of Europe to try and involve as many different cultural territories as possible. And of course, Spain and Portugal are not the same country. We know that, but we had to start at some point because 12 countries really was the maximum that we were able to cover. So we really tried in every cultural territory to at least have one country. We didn't succeed in every way we wanted to, because just finding partners in every country was also very tough, especially in the countries not as interested in young audience and children's film as, I mean, in the Nordics, we could have done every country. It was more of uninviting countries in the Nordics and than in other parts of Europe. So that's a bit how everything came together.
So the study is a mix of qualitative and quantitative methods. You've also spoken to industry professionals across Europe, but the real meat is the interactions that you, Rikke, and your team had with 374 children of this age, which is a huge pool of respondents. What did you learn about this age group that surprised you?
That's a great question. I think we learned a lot of things that surprised us. I think that, one of the things that maybe it didn't surprise me, but I think it was important to keep in the report as a reminder for the people in the industry, was that within this age group, even talking about 7 to 11 as one target group, that's actually not such a good idea because they represent so many different you can call it generational gaps already just looking at that 5-year differences. So a 7-year-old does not think of humor in the same way as an 11-year-old, and they don't understand what makes a story interesting in the same way. So I think that was just an important reminder to say there's something about how you define your target group, especially when you want to develop to this age group. I often hear filmmakers saying, I would like to make a film and I think my target group will be, let's say 7 to 15. And I'll say, why? Because that's not like you're going to miss out on the 7-year-olds, but you're also going to miss out on your 15-year-olds. So maybe you have to narrow down and focus on what is the actual target group that you want to create something for.
You also, there's some very beautiful language in the report making kind of the observation that when you're 7, you're thinking about, for instance, so in the social interactions, like who do I play well with? You're like centering yourself. And when you're 11, you're already in that sort of relational space where you're thinking about what are others thinking of me? How does like my media consumption reflect my identity? Of course, not with those words, but that is what they are de facto doing. They're seeing themselves as part of a family, which is somehow different from the rest of their life and so on. And I mean, just thinking about that shift is very thought provoking. I realize I should here bring in our third guest now as we continue to talk about these results to also get his responses. Joram Willink is an award-winning creative producer whose innovative multi-platform company Bind focuses on socially engaged films. His productions have been awarded an International Emmy Kids Award, Dutch Golden Calves, including Best Film, Berlinale Special Mention, Silver Bear for Short, Prix Europa, Isini Kid Award, Prix Jeunesse, and many, many more. His feature films are very well known. Examples lately, he's, for instance, made The Judgment for adults and My Extraordinary Summer with Tess for older kids. And we're proud to say that that one world premiered at the Berlinale Generation in 2019. Welcome, Joram.
Yeah, thank you. Good to be here.
You've been nodding a little bit already, so I wanted to let you in. What did you think about the 7-year-olds and 11-year-olds being treated as by some people as the same target audience?
Yeah, I was thinking immediately, like, I don't believe in the whole range, 7 to 11. I think you should split it up in different groups, like Rick is saying. And also, I don't use the term so much children film, to be honest. I think the films we are making is family film, because what we try to do, at least, is that the film is also a good experience for the parents, because most of the time the parents are taking the children to the film. And if they have a good time themselves, they will also do the word of mouth to other families and kids to go to the movie. So I try to create stories which are suitable for the kids and the parents, or even grandparents.
So could you all talk a little bit to that, the film consumption of children in relation to their families? Rikke, for instance, would you?
I think one of the things we also learned in the research study is that children actually really enjoy watching films with their families. It is a very social activity that they enjoy doing together. So watching a film is often connected to quality time spent with other family members. It is related to the idea of us coming together as a social entity. And compared to that, we could see that they often watch series by themselves. So already there, the films have such a strong social dimension in their view of entertainment. So I think what Joram is saying is that really holds true, because the films are what gathers families much more than series.
I think this is also from a lobby and political point of view, a very important point to make, that films have this social component, and that also extends to cinema, because to the cinema, you usually don't go alone. You go with friends. And when you're a kid, you go with your family. So it's really what distinguishes what is the USP of film and cinema. It is going together, having an experience together, a social experience, which is something we have less and less in our lives, being bound to endless things on our phone and on our laptops. So I think that's super important to stress here.
The children were also very engaged with the, with theatrical. I mean, those that can afford to go, which isn't everyone, and it's very different across these countries, as the report makes very clear. But if you live in a relatively well-off country and have sort of a middle-class lifestyle, probably as a kid you will be going to the movies relatively often.
This is something that we can actually back up with numbers from the German Federal Film Fund. They just started last year, I think, to count children in their statistics. Before that, they didn't. So now we have children from 0 or 3 years of age. So now we really know about their cinema going behavior. And we see that children and teenagers are the most vivid cinema goers among the whole German demographic, next to the 60 plus year olds. And also we see a correlation between adults having kids going to the cinema. So also adults having kids go to the cinema more often, and children who have parents who go to the cinema also go to the cinema more often. So I think this is also a very important correlation there that we might be able to see in other countries.
I think the experience of a family is a very good thing to keep in mind, because I learned from other countries and other films are made for children, that they're mostly focusing the storytelling also only on the children. Let's say it's more adventurous for them and stuff like that. And there is no angle for parents to have a good time in the story. I've seen films from outside the Netherlands, but the Netherlands, most of the time, they also pick a very relevant topic, which is relevant kids and for parents. And then we try to create a story around it. And that's also, I think, why the Dutch family films have a different quality, let's put it this way, than most of the other, like Scandinavian is doing the same. But there are also countries in Europe who think is a children film is only a children who has an adventure kind of thing. So, and it's, I think it's interesting to work on storytelling also to have more layered. And I think that's also the success of our film, My Extraordinary Summer with Tess, is because of that, because of the layered story.
And I think it's also about something that Rieke really perfectly put out of the report as a question to filmmakers, which is, what would you do differently with the script if it was aimed at adults? So if you try to aim it a bit higher from the age group, maybe it's also more fun for children to watch?
Yeah, this connects to so many things, of course. I feel like I'm circling this idea of the cinema and the age groups and the families, because there's something that I can't quite put my finger on. But I know that certainly in Sweden, where I live, the engine of the cinema is the family film. Like, those are the ones which really sell a lot of tickets. But there's also something about this idea that the 7-year-old and the 11-year-old are not the same target audience. So in one way, like, we have fewer children. Like, children are not a huge percentage of any population. So just like, that's how it goes. And it means that if you have a very sort of specific target audience, the number of potential viewers of your film is going to go down. Like, if it's ideal for 9-year-olds or 9 to 11-year-olds or something like that, then maybe it's not that family experience. And then it becomes kind of suddenly a very small niche audience. And just from a business perspective, you might actually need for that film to travel across borders to be a good deal. And I think there must be value in both. Like, there must be value in making these family films, which, like, also in their consumption pattern, they speak to different ages and they attract different ages and sell many tickets at the same time or are watched at home by the whole family. But what about those films that are sort of specifically for kids? I don't know, Rick, do you know, are you able to say something about that? Do kids watch films that are just for kids?
What we often hear the children saying is that if it's made, it can be about children, but it cannot be for children. And I think that's also why what you're saying, Joram, makes really good sense. Like, maybe don't dive into the topic of children's film, but think about it as more of a family film that will make it interesting for different age groups to be involved. Because children today are extremely good at positioning themselves as older than they are. They are really good at decoding when something is being made specifically for them. And then they simply are really quick to find it too childish. And if it's childish, it might not be interesting for them because they are often looking to be challenged in their consumption behaviors or consumption patterns. They're looking for challenging narratives. They enjoy good adventures, mission-driven stories, character-driven stories with characters that they can be inspired by and look up to. So I think that's also about finding the right balance of saying, okay, we're looking into a younger audience group who are navigating what they find to be endless universes of content that's available for them. And I think it's one of my favorite numbers, but around 23% of the Danish 10 to 14 year olds, they have watched Squid Games, which I think is a high number, but it's good to keep in mind that this is also what they are encountering out there. And that's just something to be aware of, I think.
And I guess they also are attracted by the very thing that makes me want to not watch it, which is, I mean, it is watched in my family by my husband who loves it. So I have seen a little bit. I can see it's incredibly well made and dramatically compelling. It's also very violent. And I genuinely do not believe it's appropriate for children, not even 11-year-olds, certainly not 7-year-olds. And I'm struggling a little bit with this because I don't want to give up and say, okay, kids, like they can just watch Squid Game and the teen movies that we hopefully are also making in our countries. We aren't always, but let's say we're going to solve that problem. We're going to be great, making great teen movies, and then the 7-year-olds can watch that. No, I don't think that's how it should go either. But maybe there's a clue, actually, in what you have all said so far, which I didn't quite realize when before, which is the business models are different. If you want to make feature film and you want the theatrical to be a big part of that, then maybe it needs to be a family film. Like the 7-year-olds are not going to go to the movies on their own. Like that's not typically how it goes. Maybe if you want to tell stories that are very targeted and character driven and compelling and all of those things, but don't have that family appeal, maybe those should be TV shows. And then they are, as you have seen in the study, then they will be sort of consumed more privately by the young viewers.
Well, I think this industry is changing rapidly also in the distribution. So indeed, you're saying that if you make a family film and you work on the story, on the layer, then of course you need to make an experience for the cinema, for the families. But besides that, I think there are, in the Netherlands at least, there are films made for children and it's not for parents at all. But these films are mostly filled with influencers, kind of type of actors, which are not actors at all. And so it works because it's more like a publicity marketing tool than it is a film. The quality of the film, in my view, is not a quality film as well, but it works. It's a theatrical release and they sell tickets. And then you, of course, have these blockbusters coming from the US, which are targeted for children and families. I go there with my kids because it's Christmas and it's the time of the year you go to a film like that. But I'm kind of bored when I watch these films most of the time. So when we can make in Europe these kind of family films, which are really addressing things for parents, and we can create an experience that the whole family wants to go and have a good time. And I think that last part is the thing we have to work on in the future because, the classical distribution, just to release it, trailer, poster, stuff like that, it's not going to work anymore. And we need to do different strategies to get these families in and work on other ways of presenting it and get people in the cinema. So I'm working now on research to do it differently in the future. Because also in the Netherlands, the family films, where we are talking about right now, is going lower and lower in admissions. But people really like it, but they don't. It's too competitive at the moment to get these films in a good slot and keep them in the cinemas.
The overproduction of theatrical films, also something we've talked about on this podcast a lot, and we'll be talking about again. I'll park it just now so I don't fall down that rabbit hole. But I'm thinking about this idea still of the films traveling, and because we all have like a shared understanding, I think, on this call and in the film industry in Europe more widely, that there is a difference between a quality film from Europe and it's different in tone, from a quality, more often publicly funded film from Europe and a sort of film that is created for a commercial marketplace, even though, of course, a lot of these American family films are outstanding. Some of them are masterpieces. I don't begrudge anyone seeing them. I love them, too. But there is something different, which we think is also important. So I wonder, Anne, like, from all of your work now with this, with these projects in Cinerego, do you see a path? Do you see real ways, like also given this competitive situation, that we could have a future, let's say 5 years from now, where a really good Dutch family film would be, maybe not in theaters, maybe in theaters in Sweden, but also at least like known and seen on in some format by Swedish families or Montenegrin families?
I really hope so. To be honest, this was, I think, my main reason for doing this research when we had this conversation that Rieke talked about in the beginning of this episode in Berlin, I think 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I was really baffled that a lot of people in the industry who have been in the industry for a long time always told me this film can't travel to other countries because children just won't see it. And I was always questioning, because being in contact with children, you know that they watch more and more content from all over the world, also subtitled in English. And for German children, not having something dubbed in German, but reading English subtitles, so watching a Korean anime with English subtitles, this was something unimaginable a few years ago. Now they do that because they enjoy watching the content. Everybody's talking about it. So of course they also want to watch it. It's like, but shouldn't this be also then an opportunity for European films as well? And these borders that we still have in our heads, do those borders actually exist still in the heads of children nowadays? Because when they travel, the borders are open still in most of the countries. Let's not talk about the political situation now. But also when they're consuming content, everything is so accessible to them. I think the question really is, how do we market it? Like Joram said, like, how do we get the films, like the accessibility of the films, but also the marketing for the films? So really, when we're talking about successful children's family films, the art housey types usually don't have the huge marketing budgets, and they also don't have the negotiation power with sales or distribution companies to book several slots in a week in the cinemas, because those slots are already full with other deals that big sales and distribution companies are doing.
And on top of that, maybe if it's like, let's say, a young teen audience or something like that, if it's not the broad family appeal, then the distributors might not even want to take on a film for young audiences, because again, maybe it's a small market and then numerically there isn't a business, even if it does well. But I'll turn to Rieke here then and say, well, what do we know about how children select films and about social media, for instance? Like, are there ways that where we could communicate our films differently?
That's a huge question. But I think I will start it by saying we heard the word TikTok and YouTube multiple times during this research. This is where the young audiences believe they encounter what they are choosing to watch. So they might be influenced through other channels, but those two are what they will highlight by themselves when they talk about where they find new things to watch. And I think that's also important to remember. Often I talk to adults who say, no, but TikTok, we can't talk about TikTok because they're not supposed to be there. They're not the right age. And I'll say, but they are there. Or they will have older siblings who are there. So we have to take those new sorts of medias very seriously also when we think about how to get their attention. And then I would say that we also heard a lot, like Anne is saying, we heard a lot of children saying that they are not afraid to watch content from other countries. They're not afraid to watch something that's not in their own language. Language doesn't really seem to be a barrier for their understanding of good narratives or interesting characters. Especially the better they get at reading, they'll be able to read subtitles, or they'll be able to understand if something is in English. So I think we saw a huge amount of curiosity in the younger audiences. And I think that's the thing we have to keep as a positive thing coming out of this research. They're really curious to explore new worlds and new universes. So now it's just a question of how we get their attention.
So this is interesting. You're saying curiosity here. I was also thinking about curiosity a lot when I was reading. And I think Joram has alluded to this incredibly politely when he says something like we have to work with the content. Let's just say that some European children's films are kind of not great. Like they are boring, also for grown-ups. They are boring, but also for children they are boring. So then I'm wondering, like, who are they actually for? Like, clearly we are not actually entirely succeeding with this. And I think part of that is this need, which I feel in my bones as a mother. Like, I feel that I want to educate children and I want everything to be very healthy and good for them. But I wonder if we're hamstrung a little bit by that urge to be very important and very pedagogical. I wrote in my notes when I was reading, I wrote, exploration is bigger than education. That you all found that kids don't like to be preached to. They don't, if it feels like education, if they smell it, they're out. But if it's something that they can explore, like a curiosity-driven engagement with the exact same content and the same themes and the same new countries and cultures possibly, then they would be motivated. And I wonder, is there something, because this feels like advice to filmmakers, like, okay, make that film about the topic, but just tell the story in a different way. I don't know, maybe Ricky, would you like to like clarify a little bit my like takeaways? Like, what is it that I am saying from your data? What do we know about how they should be structured, these films?
Well, I think one of my favorite quotes from the research is this 8-year-old girl from Wales who's answering the question, why do you watch films? And she goes, well, I just want to feel happy. And I think that's such a strong quote and also a good thing to keep in mind that these children are also looking to be entertained and to feel good. And I think that's where the barrier sometimes comes with all of these really strong good intentions that we want them to learn something. We want them to take very important life lessons away from the content that they are watching. And I thought something that was also interesting was that children are often very selective in what they decide to learn from the films they're watching. And they will always point at something that they find inspirational or that they find interesting, that they, makes them curious about new topics or new hobbies or interesting things in the world. But they would like to feel that they can select themselves what it is that drives their curiosity. And I think that's also something, Joram, that we have learned working together on a previous project about how there can be so many strong, good intentions in a story. But when you ask the younger audiences, maybe they will pinpoint different perspectives in the story that they find very, very valuable.
Yeah, no, that was really interesting. Of course, as the makers, the script writers, the director had all kinds of ideas what to address in the film, and it was already written. But with the publicum research, we could prioritize stuff and we could make the layers in different order, which was really helpful for a film we are now financing, Stardust. And it was a very tough subject matter in a way, which is now in the third layer, you could say, about the completed life that someone who is older decides that it's enough. And then the kids is the main character.
Someone decides to die, is what you're saying.
At a certain point, the grandfather says, well, at a certain point, I will leave life. Not now, but it will be in the future because I will not be in the hospital. Stuff like that. You know, in Dutch, it's called, translated would be completed life. It's a phrase. That's a beautiful term.
I haven't come across it. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know the English version for that, actually. Maybe it's more Dutch than outside the Netherlands, but
I'm not sure English has a phrase for that.
Yeah. Well, I even experienced myself when my aunt decided that and I had to explain my kids. So it's not something kids are not aware of. It's in their lives. But to address that as a first layer in the story, It's not interesting as a film. So, but it's still there. It's and we will not present the film as it is about this subject matter, but it's still underneath it. And it also is valuable for parents and grandparents. So in this case, for this film, we were talking about TikTok and YouTube for the kids, how they choose. But I strongly believe that the parents and grandparents also have a say in it. And we also should address them to take the kids to, as a family experience, to a film, to the cinema. So
you're kind of talking about all of you, this idea that maybe like a film is a rich world in some way.
Yeah, well, it could be. It always be.
And there are these there needs to be these interesting characters, and the stories can be in the world, and the slot, like the film can be entertaining and character driven and narratively complex. They want absolutely no repetition because the children find that childish. I had no idea. I thought that was an incredibly practical takeaway. No repetition, no predictability, character driven. But there can be like this, but it can still be a world that contains drama and contains serious topics as long as it isn't preaching at them. Is that what we're saying, basically?
Yeah, and it
sounds so easy.
Well, it is not. It's very complicated, and that's why public analysis was really helpful to prioritize the stuff and make things bigger. And because, like, the adventurous part of the kid is still prominent storyline, and we make it more important. And also the way kids are used to work on social media. So these elements were already there, but really under the surface. So we make them more important and change the priority. And that's helpful because when I work with writers and directors, you're so much as a adult looking to the kids, and you need to investigate and also get the kids in the process to test if you're on the right page. And that's what Publicum really helped us with.
Now you are connecting beautifully to my next question. We're also a little bit approaching the end of our time together. So I will ask all of you this same one. If I am a filmmaker and I'm working with content for children, clearly, if I personally am anything to go by, you will need to learn more about what's happening. You'll start with reading this report, of course, and then you need to speak to actual children at some point. Publicum can help you, but you can't help everybody. So everybody needs to speak to real live human children about these films. How on earth do you do that? And I know, like, you have to listen. Yeah, but no, but like, can you give some advice of like how to frame a conversation? How do you formulate a question to get something useful out of kids? Joram wants to go first. Go.
Yeah, because I have it several times that I work with directors and they said, yeah, I ask my kids and they like it. Yeah, well, first thing, you don't ask your own kids. You make a good test. You make a group of people which maybe even don't know, and you ask open questions, not closed questions, like open questions, and really listen. You know, and that's so elementary and maybe stupid to say, but it happens so many times. They say, "Yeah, my nephew or my kid." I have it so many times, and so that's the first thing. Create a test. Call it a test. Even people don't even call it a test. They just ask around a little bit. No, make a test at a certain point in writing, in editing, all certain moments. Create tests. Yeah.
The reason I love that you're saying test is that the test per definition means that it can fail. It might fail. That's part of the point. That's why you're testing. And you haven't failed if the test doesn't work out. That just means now you know what you need to change.
Exactly.
So a test is something where a failure is also a success. But we are terrified as an industry of this. Ricky, you're nodding. What's your advice to someone who needs to work with children?
Yeah, well, I'm nodding because also the word test can be a little problematic as to the many reasons that you're mentioning now. And also because in the industry, people have this idea that you often only involve the audience when there's a finished film that you can then test. But then the results, if it is a failure, it will be too late because you have already made the film. So from our perspective, it's about really daring to involve and engage with especially the young audiences, because they have a great imagination themselves. And sometimes they are more courageous than you are in your own story development. I think one of my favorite questions to ask for the young audience is, when you have presented them with the story, maybe you shared with the synopsis or you invited them into the universe of the characters, then you ask them, if you had to retell this story to a friend, what would you say? Because in that way, you really get their idea of what is the most important thing you have in your story. Where is the primary hook for them? Which of the characters are they talking about? And something we have learned also part of this research is that often they will start by talking about that one character that they found the most interesting. They don't give so much time to talking about the plot or the overarching narrative of the story. They will go straight to the character. So that will also give you an idea of, wait, maybe I have some unseen potential in some of my characters that I can even develop further.
Mm. And do you have a piece of advice for someone who needs to talk to real live children?
Yeah, I think we need also to address that only making children's or family films doesn't mean that you know how to talk to children. And if you know you're not good at it, or even if you think you're good at it, maybe it's good to get some help on board from a person who actually does this for a living. So there are film educators out there. There are children's film festivals. They have staff who do this for a living. There are children's theater companies or all kinds of different approaches of working with children. Somebody may be able to help you or at least give you some advice, because if you just put a filmmaker in front of a group of children and they just do their artsy creative talk, that doesn't mean that children will be able to engage with that person. So there might be help out there for you.
Yeah, and there are actually tools. The like CineKit has this lab where they test with children. And there are some methods already in place, so you can use it and or adapt it. Yeah.
And we're also building one at our German festival at the moment, because we're getting a lot of feedback from production companies who are like, yeah, I hear you. Co-creation, participation, very important. I understand. But how on earth should I approach children? It might seem creepy if I just approach children. So maybe also talk to your local children's film festivals and start something there.
You know, I was just going to say that I think I increasingly see different types of like meet the audience events at children's film industry events. And maybe your local children's film festival doesn't have one, but maybe you could be part of creating one together with them. And you who are listening might even bring a project to test. And as our guests have said today, to test at different stages in the production. We're going to wrap up a little bit, but I think I would like to ask you still, Rikke and Anne, how would you like this report to be used?
Well, I hope that it will be used as an inspirational catalog, so that it will give filmmakers a better idea of who is my audience and where are they in life in general, but also where are they when we look at them not only as audiences but as humans, because they have real life interests and they have things that they care about, that they think about. I would love to see it being used as a tool to approach the young audiences and hopefully help filmmakers be better at creating quality content, because that was also one of the main ambitions of doing this research, to say we need to create better quality content for the young audience if we want them to choose European content over American content. And I think the report is a good way to take kids seriously, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's it precisely.
Yeah, and I think that's a very important notion of using this as an inspiration. It's not a recipe. We have the 10 key takeaways in the beginning of the report for people who don't like to read the whole thing. But it doesn't mean that using the 10 key takeaways is the perfect recipe for the perfect children's or family film. And of course, just because children want this or that, because they're used to watching this or that, doesn't mean that you might not have a very creative and good idea that introduces something new into the world of children and young audiences. This is really why the creative work behind everything is so important, just offering something new every once in a while. And maybe not a completely different point, but a little bit of a different point. It's not only for filmmakers. Of course, every filmmaker out there read it, use it. It's also for decision makers, because I think a lot of the key takeaways in there are things that people who have done several children's or family films already kind of know about if they did good work before. But I think a lot of decision makers can learn from this and maybe also give a bit more agency to filmmakers and trust them a bit more and trust the young audience a bit more to offer more challenging content. And I don't mean violence. I just mean that I think children can do a lot more, take them more serious. But for that, we also need people in important positions to actually believe that this is the way to go.
You know what? I'm now, as you said this, I'm thinking not violence. You said, I don't maybe think that kids necessarily watch Squid Game because it's edgy and violent. What if they watch it because it's about poverty and desperation and powerlessness? Like, maybe that's it. Like, that it's a way where something exciting happens because people feel they have to. Like, maybe it's also like those layers are also there in that story.
I think the kids just watch it because all the kids are talking about it. It's just a hype. Yeah, it's a hype. If you make a film, you want to be the hype. You want to be that people talk about it and want to watch it. My daughter of 11 year olds watched Squid Game illegally, of course, but of course she watched it. You cannot stop that. It doesn't work because other people are talking about it because it's extreme. And I think what Anna is saying is correct. You know, there needs to be more boldness in decision making, that we have to push boundaries in storytelling and the content. You know, the way it's made, the style, the tone, the story. If you do the same thing all over again for decades, then it's not going to change. Well, the Squid Game is a totally different take on it, and that's why it's popular. So I believe really that you have to innovate the films itself as well. And also, just to come back to that, in the release of the films, because the release of films is very standard at the moment, also for family films. Like, for instance, when we released My Extraordinary Summer with Tess, the kids are asking the first time in the school of my kids, like, when is it on Netflix? No, it's in theaters. And then the parents wanted to go, but they are saying, yeah, I don't have time next weekend, but I will go the weekend after or the weekend after that. When is it showing? And I say, I don't know. You have to look on Thursday in the agenda, and then you can see when it's showing. Well, this is not working anymore. Not for family films, not for art house films. People don't understand why they cannot book a film in 10 days. And families are very busy nowadays. So we have to change that model as well. We can make the best films ever, but the release and distribution also has to create a new environment for family films.
I agree. And I think that's going to be my wish for how this report is read, because the whole first half of it is actually not about the audience report, like study in detail, although that is there very richly presented as well. It's about different kinds of processes for policymaking and problem solving around this wider ecosystem that we're all part of, and the problems that you, Joram, are just now describing. And I also found that those just descriptions of what kinds of workshops you've had and so on, like, incredibly useful. So I think if you're anywhere else in the value chain, if you're a distributor, certainly, if you're in funding, if you're in arts policy, now is the time to take a real look at what tools do we have to work together and make change, because we are at a political moment where I don't think decision makers will get more bold. I think they will get less bold unless we really demonstrate that there is a big groundswell, a big audience, a big citizenship of people in and outside this industry who really want that important film for children to get made.
And I think the examples are already there, but most of the time I had several times that people afterwards think, yeah, of course this was successful, of course it worked. So well, before that nobody believed in it. So sometimes it's good to have these cases and really look backward how it came about that it worked, you know, because it was new, because it was different, that's how it works. And I think decision makers lots of time don't look backwards. And sometimes there are these examples where we could really learn from. That would be very helpful. Yeah.
Agreed. Enrique, final words?
I just wish everyone good luck in creating some really great quality content, because I think they deserve it, the young audiences of Europe. I really, really think they deserve that we take them seriously.
And their final words, maybe the future of the report or this project?
First of all, what Rike said. And then second, we're actually at the moment thinking about a second edition of the report, including maybe other, not maybe, quite possibly other countries than the 12 that we already had, because countries did approach me after knowing about the report. Why didn't you ask us to be in this? So I already have a few countries interested. I would love to keep this going, because children are growing up so fast. The children that we interviewed last year are not the same children we will be interviewing next year or in 2 years' time. So I think it would be very helpful to make this a thing every 2 or 3 years. So if you have some money left, if you want to invest in this, because we want this to be publicly available, come at me. Write me an email.
If you're a public funder, for instance, who know you need to do something with children's film, but you're slightly struggling to make it work, here's somewhere where I think the money will pay itself back manifold. Thank you so much, Anna Schultke, Rike Flodin and Joram Willink.
Thank you.
Thank you, Johanna.
Thank you.
This season of Industry Insights is produced in cooperation with the Goethe-Institut and co-funded by Creative Europe Media. Today's episode was developed in partnership with Kids Regio and Publicum. Please tune in to future episodes of Industry Insights and tell your friends. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts and, of course, on the website of the European Film Market. That's www.efm-berlinale.de. Thanks for tuning in. Goodbye.